Welcome to the Cigar Lounge, the official podcast of the Cigar Peg, where you get to know your friends a little better, learn a little bit more about each other, and grow as a community. Today, we have Chuck Gallagher in the Cigar Lounge. Chuck, how are you this morning?
Yo, I'm finer than a frog hair split three ways. How's that?
I like that. I always thought finer than a frog hair was good. Yeah. I like the split three ways thing.
Man, it's a good day. It is a good day.
Chuck, let me ask you, and I always, all these interviews, I try to start the same way because I just want you to tell people a little bit about what you do and who you are.
Wow. Well, Joe, let's start off. I'm a multidisciplined individual.
There you go.
I am a professional speaker, which is why we're here in the Cigar Peg with each and talking with each other. I own a video production company called Primo Productions. We do video for all kinds of organizations. And I'm a vice president in a public company in the funeral space. So we're the last folks to let you down. People are just dying to use us.
I love that. You know, and that explains why you wear black so much.
Well, you know, it just is a great contrast to my fledgling gray hair. How's that?
Yeah, see, and I just wear black because I tell people I think it makes me look smaller. So, Chuck, let me ask you this. For purposes of Cigar Peg, I mean, I could ask how you got into the funeral business. That could be fun. But let me ask you, how did you end up in the, I want to say, speaker, entertainer space, video space? How did that all come about?
Well, Joe, let me put it this way. I'm going to make this really quick. Back in the 80s, when I was a CPA, I taught continuing education courses for 8 hours. 8 hours of tax law. I mean, that has got to be one of the most titillating things that people would do. But it taught me stage presence, how to hold an audience for a long period of time. And then, of course, I screwed that whole career up. Ended up in federal prison because I was a total dumbass. And when I got out, that got me into the funeral business because mom always said death and taxes, screwed up taxes, figured I'd try death. And it was the only place that would give me a job. But by 2006, I was a senior VP of sales and marketing in a public company.
Okay.
And people said, well, how can you be a senior VP in a public company and a convicted felon? And I said, well, every choice has a consequence. And I said, man, you should talk about that. And I thought, well, you know, doggone, that makes sense. So I began my speaking career in Dallas, Texas with NSA North Texas and went to a lovely lady by the name of Betty Garrett, Garrett Speakers International. She said, what do you speak on? I said, choices and consequences. And she said, that's great. Nobody will hire you because they're not looking for that. But yeah, great topic. And I said, well, what do I speak on? She said, ethics. And I said, I violated it. She said, that's exactly why you speak on it, because people want to know how can smart people do dumb things and therefore prevent it. And so, I guess that's what I do. And from that point forward, I became a professional speaker. All the while, I still continue my employment in the funeral space, and I'm a vice president in a public company today.
Well, hey, when you got into, and let's talk about this, you got into the speaking, and people say that we got into speaking. What did that look like? Meaning, as you stepped into the speaking space, how did it look and feel at that time?
So I was given some really good advice. I'm going to go back to Betty for a second. Betty said to me, she said, there's two ways to do this, Chuck. She said, you can do it the slow, cheap way or the more expensive, fast way. And I was like, what are you talking about? She said, well, let's just say that you were going to have a hamburger joint. You could go to Sam's, buy your burgers, buy your, you know, 5 gallons of ketchup, your buns and so forth. You could find a hole in the wall to rent to cook the things. And you could go to Kinko's and print flyers up and put them out. And it would not cost you a lot to get into it to have Chuck's Burger Bar. But you would struggle to make money. Or you could buy a McDonald's franchise. She said, so speaking is a lot the same way. A lot of people get into it, but they're not willing to invest in what they need to have to be a professional speaker. And you need a minimum of three things. You need a good website. whatever your topic is, find your competitors and make sure your website is as good as theirs, because if it's not, you won't get the nod. Two, you got to have an excellent one sheet. At least that's what it was referred to at the time. Right. And third and most important, you got to have a video that is going to showcase you to the meeting professional and will cause them to believe you're capable of delivering the goods. Now, all of that's going to cost you money, which means on the front end, before you ever make a dollar, you're going to have an investment of a sizable chunk of change to get those things. But if you do that, and then you're willing to do the work to market yourself and be found, you can enter the speaking business. And I was like, okay. And then she said, now, go find somebody that's highly successful and ask them, what do you need to do? And if you ask five people, they'll all have an opinion. But if somebody is making a comfortable six figures and maybe seven, listen to them, because they will give you nuggets that will make your business successful.
And were these people in the speaking business that you went to?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
First lady I went to, Joe, I sat down with her and I said, can I pick your brain? I'll take you to lunch. She said, you can take me to lunch. Thank you. And you can ask me one question. So be very careful about the question you ask. So I said, okay.
Finding the genie on the beach. Yes.
Yeah. Kind of. That's the concept. And I said, what one thing do I need to do in order to quickly advance my speaking business? And she said, okay, I'll tell you. You won't do it probably, because most people won't, but I'll tell you exactly what it is. Write a blog a day, 5 days a week for 6 months. Every single day you have a blog. And I was like, how the hell do you do that? And she explained it to me very simply. And I was like, oh, I can do that. So when I first started, I looked at all of the speakers in the ethics space, saw who they were, what you could find organically on Google. And in 6 months, I had displaced them. It doesn't mean, by the way, Joe, I was better. I wasn't a better speaker. I just outworked them.
You're a better marketer.
I was a better marketer. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, playing the algorithms and getting into the search engines is always a joy when that happens.
Yep.
So after that 6 months, you outworked them. And at that point, were you out speaking or was it just getting rolling? Tell me about that.
So two parts to the answer to that question. I was out speaking. However, the other advice I got was get a speech coach. And I was a bit offended. I thought, you know, I'm decent voice and I've got a little personality. I can't imagine that I suck that bad. And the answer was no, it's not the delivery that's your issue. It's your content. Because, you know, you're an attorney, Joe. I was former CPA. I got analytically too involved in detail and the audience wants emotion.
Exactly. Yep.
And so the speech coach, Karen Cortell Reisman, was masterful at this, but I sat down with her, delivered the presentation once, then delivered it again, and then she dissected it and reassembled it and took all of the detail crap out that really nobody cared about and put the emotion in. So when I was speaking to an audience, I might be able to talk about the details if they need it, but the questions of marriage and children and what happened in life and how that impacted me and how that impacted them and how they could, how the audience could relate to challenges in life and how to overcome those challenges. That was the stone, so to speak, that the knife was sharpened on. So when I did my first really seriously paid gig for an organization, I ended up in that organization becoming Speaker of the Year for them.
That's fantastic. And I guess I translate that advice into what I call leave your heart on the stage and keep your mind for the hallways afterwards.
Absolutely. I love that line, by the way, Joe. That's awesome.
That's what I always said when I was a trial lawyer. I had to leave my heart in the courtroom. Yep. And my brain is what I used in the hallways with the judge.
Yep.
But now that's great advice for people. And I think people need to realize that what you're talking about is what makes it an art form, Chuck. So thank you.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned who your first mentor was. As you rode this wave into speaking, did you develop other mentors and other people to assist you along the way?
Yeah, and here's the thing. Betty was instrumental. Karen was instrumental. NSA North Texas was instrumental. They were just wonderful people. The one thing I found about NSA, Joe, and I think you'll really connect with this, to me, it's the only association that I've been involved with where people just freely give you information and don't seem to have any compulsion to want to hold it tight. And I've, you know, been in the CPA associations and it was like, oh my God, we're not going to give you our proprietary information. I mean, that might give you a competitive advantage. And it's like, that doesn't happen here. So over time, I decided that I needed to hang out with people that were a whole lot better than me. I always felt like when I was hanging in a group, I was probably the person that was least able to contribute because I was absorbing from folks who were in the Speaker Hall of Fame or who were comfortably doing six figures in speaking. I wanted to learn what it was that they were doing, either to enhance my stage presence, but mostly I wanted to figure out how to market. Because I'm going to stick foot in mouth here, and I'll say this with all the love in my heart, but I've talked with and worked with a lot of speakers, and they work on stagecraft and delivery, but are scared. I won't use the word. They're scared of marketing. And it's like, how do you think you're going to sell yourself? Especially if you're a sales speaker, but you're afraid to pick up the telephone and get a rejection. That's the doggondest thing I've ever seen. But, you know, we've got to market ourselves if we want to get booked.
That's exactly right. You know, I'm laughing as I'm smiling and I'm going to ask, I always ask this question of if you could go back and tell your 16-year-old self one piece of advice. So for you, I'm going to phrase that differently, which is if you could tell your 16-year-old self anything other than please don't commit fraud, what would that advice have been? I'm going to rule out the obvious right now.
Okay. Dang, Joe. Oh my God. All right. So I'm honestly going to answer that question two ways. Okay. First thing, in 1987 is when the first fraud occurred. So I'm going to leave that in place because had it not been for that, I would still be in a CPA today and I wouldn't be able to do what I passionately love doing. So I've got to accept the fact that was a stepping stone to a better outcome. But the other two things in 1987 is I would have bought Apple stock in Microsoft because then I could fly my own private plane wherever the hell I wanted to go.
Exactly. There you go. That's great. So of all those lessons and the marketing advice that you share, people should pick up on it. But if right now a new speaker came to you and said to you, can you give me one secret that has worked well for you? What is the one thing that you think has been the most powerful secret in your speaking career?
So, again, I'm going to answer the question two ways. You said one. I'm going to combine two things into one, but it is consistently marketing. Here's what I found. I developed an association mailing list because I generally assume it's a little easier to get into an association as a speaker than it is to try to find out who is the person that hires for Microsoft, for example. Okay. So I developed an association mailing list and occasionally I would send out something and I got no responses. Then I sent out something once a month. Response was negligible. I found out when I send out something of value, not just, hey, hire Chuck, hey, hire Chuck, hey, hire Chuck, but something of value on a weekly basis. And for me, it's every Tuesday at 10 a.m. What I find is, over time, I will tend to get 2 to 3 inquiries a week because I'm sending one thing out every week consistently. It's not bombarding them. And it goes to the Meredith Elliott Powell approach of give them something of value. So I will give them an article. I will share an idea. I will give them some stats, something that's going to positively help them. And if I'm doing that consistently, but not killing them with emails, I get enough responses to keep me busy speaking. Now, I'm going to combine that with, that's email direct marketing, but the flip side to that is also feed the beast. Now, what's the beast? Google and YouTube. Same company, two different things. So I'm consistently, and I started this, Joe, the past 6 months I studied this stuff. And so the 28th of December, I committed, it's going to sound crazy, but I'm going to do a video a day, every day to post on YouTube. Okay. And in the process of doing that, and I'll check this real quick, but in the process of doing that, I have found that as of this morning, I've had in the past 28 days, 40,100 views, 716 watch hours of video, and I've added 736 new subscribers.
Wow.
Now, nice. I'm not saying that to brag. That's not a brag thing. No. It's just, if you give the content, if you like the blog a day, 5 days a week, if I feed YouTube a video, even if it's a short video, 60 seconds or less, if I feed that every day, what's happening is in my space, I'm just clogging this with content. So when someone does on occasion search, I am going to be the person most found.
Got it.
And if I am, I'm most likely going to get the call.
Well, and okay, so a video a day, that's a commitment and it's a decision. What motivates you to keep pumping that out, other than the fact that you're a video guy? I mean, to do it, what is it that motivates you to get up and do that?
Well, okay, so let me do this. I'm going to really want to make this simple. It's not as hard as it sounds, okay? So I'm going to just kind of pull back the onion. Now, some people will not like this, but, you know, hey, I'm pulling back the onion. So here's the deal. I'm going to go in and I'm going to define what are my keywords. What are the things that I want to talk about? Okay. Second chances, business ethics, white collar crime, fraud prevention, things that are in my lane. Okay. I'm going to go in. I will put that information in, look up keywords, find out what's trending on YouTube. That takes 5 minutes, not rocket science. Okay. I will then go into ChatGPT. Or Jasper, but some AI, and I will say the easiest thing to do is ChatGPT. I would like you to give me 25 titles for videos related to the importance of ethics in business. I know that sounds so sexy, but it's going to give me 25 really cool titles.
Right.
Okay, cool. Now I've got 25 titles. All right. I want you to write me a 100-word script relative to title number one that is conversational and pithy, and it's going to write me a script. And I'm going to look at that script and say, well, you know what? It's a pretty doggone good script right there. So within the scope of easily 30 minutes, I'm going to have 25 scripts. I put them on the teleprompter, sit down in the studio. I shoot everything right now with my iPhone 14 Pro Max. Okay, I've got $10,000 cameras in the studio. I'm using an iPhone. I'm using the iPhone mic. I'm not using the, you know, $400 mic I'm talking into right now. Okay. I just go in and record those things one after the other. So literally, these are less than 1 minute scripts. So in 30 minutes, I've got a month's worth of scripts recorded. All I end up having to do is take them, get them subtitled, and AI does that for me as well. So, you know, in half a day, I can post a video a day on YouTube, not have to worry about it and be done with it.
Exactly. No, I get that. And that's kind of what I want to go with. I also, you said something else, which is you said you do it on your iPhone.
Yep.
And you are Mr. Video Guy with all that production equipment. And I think people need to hear that you use your iPhone, because all that technology is not getting you traction. You don't need it every day.
No, you don't. We just did a, here at Primo, we just did a program for NSA Kansas. And we were out in Kansas shooting people doing demo videos. Okay. Now, we did that with a three camera shoot, and we had a wonderful live mic and great audio, but the three camera shoot was three iPhone Pro Maxes. Instead of slogging around these $7,000 or $8,000 cameras, which look cool, but are expensive to transmit, we use three iPhones. And Joe, the quality of the video, you can't tell the difference.
Yep.
So that was the most practical shoot we've done. It's amazing today, the technology crammed into what you stick in your pocket.
Oh, no, I get that. I will tell you, I mean, I do videos for YouTube. I was doing them last year. I haven't done any new ones yet. But no, I sit in front of Zoom and let it record it for me and just talk to the camera. I just want people to understand that what you're saying, because we get so caught up in the details and minutiae of making sure everything's perfect. And perfect is not getting traction on the internet.
Right.
I saw a report the other day that posts that have typos in them get higher traction than ones that don't. It's the way of the world right now.
Yeah, actually, you say that. I was going to break off on that for a second. It's a funny trick in that if you've got these shorts, now shorts are, you know, what I call vertical, not horizontal, but vertical. And most of the time they're subtitled. But if you intentionally make a mistake in the subtitling, somebody watching the short will go down and say, you made a mistake in your thing. Well, to YouTube, A, they watched it and it watched again and it watched again while they're typing, chastising you for making a mistake, which means now they're interacting with the video and YouTube thinks that's absolutely awesome. So some people intentionally do it because it tricks people into being responsive to the video, even though it's responsive in a different way.
Exactly. Good point. Thank you.
Yep.
Let me ask you, I'm going to go back to, you had to change your career drastically because of the situation, shall we call it?
Yep.
What one lesson did you come out of that with that you can share that guides your life?
It's easy. Your history doesn't create your destiny.
Beautiful.
You know, I made just some of the dumbassest mistakes in the world back in the 80s. And do I regret them? Yes. Has it changed the trajectory of my life? Yes. But I would say to you, now approaching the last, we'll call it quarter of my life. And if it's a quarter, I'm going to be lucky. But the reality of it is, if the message I can leave with people is, your history doesn't create your destiny. You do not have to be a victim of circumstances. Being a victor is a choice. And when you choose that, your life can be amazing. And, you know, you just have to accept the fact that as humans, we have flaws and there are certain things. I still live the consequences. The consequences are still there. There are certain things that I'm not allowed to do, and that's okay. I accept the fact. It's a good reminder of what I am allowed to do and how that has positively changed my life.
And in those positive changes, do you, sitting here today, consider yourself to be successful?
Yeah, I do.
And at what moment did you ever say to yourself, oh my God, I'm successful, I'm cool, this is great?
You know, it was, it was probably a good 10 years following my release from federal prison. Because by that point I was a senior VP in a public company. So I had a title, income was decent. But that then opened the door to speaking and it's been to me then a slow progression, but Joe, to me, success is defined by making a positive impact on the lives of other people. And so here's how that plays. And I don't know when it happens, but like my first book that I wrote was called Second Chances. And so occasionally, it's not every week, but maybe once a month, I get this call. And the call will be from a prison somewhere. And somehow my book has made it into the prison library. I don't know how that happened, but it's there. And I publish my phone number. I'm fine with that. And someone will call saying, you know, I'm weeks away from getting out. I'd love to be able to talk with you. Oh, my God, I can't believe you answered your phone. Well, who the hell else is going to answer my phone? And we can then have a conversation and to be able to talk with people and to help them see they're not a victim of circumstance. They can make choices in their life that can create amazing outcomes from them. And to know that it's out there in the ethers somewhere, something's happening, but my ego doesn't need to know what that is and how it's taking place. I just know it's taking place. And that to me is success.
And that is phenomenal. I embrace that. So, you know, let me ask you, by the way, just out of curiosity, I don't know if anybody else cares, but I do. What prison were you in? I don't remember.
It was a federal prison camp at Seymour Johnson Air Force Base. Okay. It was minimum security prison. People said, you got club fed. And I was like, well, it is a club because I'm in BOP.gov and will be for the rest of my life. And it was fed, which is a hell of a lot better than state. And oh, yeah. You probably as an attorney know that.
Yep.
But it was an experience for sure.
Yeah, my best friend was an accountant who did time at Fort Dix. So,
gotcha.
you know, so that I get that world. I just wanted to know where you were. I was curious.
Yep.
I guess looking forward, and you said you're going to be doing a video a day. What else do you have on the dream board, your vision board, your whiteboard? What do you have that you're going, I'm going to implement this year, something new?
Well, the answer to the question is I'm already implementing some. I'm doing a video a day. I've made the commitment to the NSA community that I'm doing two videos a week that I will, you know, that I send out to people that are on my mailing list. By the way, if somebody wants to be on that so that they can get the free videos, it's, you know, just email me at chuck@chuckgallagher.com, say, put my name on the list. That's fine. But I'm doing that because that's my give back to the NSA community. I'm also committed to finishing up two books that are in process. One of them is complete. And so it's in the edit process. And the other one is three chapters away from being done, which then can go into the edit process. Because there's just some things in my life that, you know, I feel need to be told and out and so forth. So it's going to be a busy year.
That's great. Good for you. And actually, you started on what I always call my closing, which is how do people get you? And it's chuck@chuckgallagher.com. Yep. And this goes out just to the cigar peg, unless some straggler finds us on the internet.
And if they do, okay.
And that's the best way for cigar peg members to get a hold of you is using that email, right?
Absolutely. All sure. Right.
And as we wind down, any one final piece of advice or something you want to share with everybody?
Well, okay, this might sound, Joe, self-serving. It's not the intent. Okay, so I want to just say that on the front end. But here's the thing that I think for us as speakers, we need to think about. And you will understand this better than probably most because you're an attorney. But attorneys, accountants, et cetera, we typically will sell our time for money. Here's my time. You give me money. And as speakers, we do the same thing. Here's my time. Here's my day. You pay me money. But I jokingly have said this, but it's really true. If you went to Broadway, for example, and Tom Hanks was the star of a particular play, I'm sure it would be lovely to see on Broadway, and I bet Tom Hanks would be amazing in it. And he's going to exchange time for money. But he makes a hell of a lot more money doing a movie because it gets sold over and over and over and over again. And as speakers, as soon as we embrace, if we were willing to record ourselves and not just a keynote, but I mean record like Netflix quality, create something that people would want to see or buy, then we will create a different income stream. And that may be a docuseries. It may be something related to a book. I don't know what exactly it is, but I will say this. I found because of COVID accidentally that when I recorded the presentation and I'll say this, tricked people into thinking it was a live presentation when it was recorded. I have sold that recording over and over and over and over again virtually and never been live doing it, although the audience thinks I am.
Got it. Well, and I think that that's something everybody wants to figure out now. They can reach out to you at chuck@chuckgallagher.com. You'll help them find their Oscar-winning performance that will bring them income for the rest of their lives.
Wow. Okay, that's a really big promise. I'm glad you made that promise.
I made that.
Sure would love to help.
Well, Chuck, thank you so much for joining us in the Cigar Lounge today. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Joe. Take care.
Thank you. And we thank you, our listener members. Please join us every 2 weeks as we drop a new episode, placing another Cigar Peg member in the spotlight of the Cigar Lounge.